Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today as we, on the second Thursday of the month, always talk about water issues, home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. And our guests are Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. He specializes in residential renovation projects. And Ken is celebrating a birthday today, so he has this glow about him. Ken, it's great to see you.
It's good to see you too, Jim. Thank you.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, involved in historic restoration, water issues, and is also a licensed home inspector. And John, it's a pleasure to see you once again.
Great to be back, Jim.
And if you have questions for our guests, all you have to do, if you're in Madison, is pick up the phone and call 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. A couple of housekeeping items left over from last program. A letter from Watertown from Gertrude says, during heavy rains, we suffered a leaky roof. Water poured into the house through the ceilings and down into the basement. We caught what we could, but much of it went through. After a long delay, our roof is being repaired, thank goodness, but that leaves the damage to walls and ceiling. I hear so much concern about mold on TV. We have had some minor leakage before and suffered no ill effects. How can we tell if we have mold and if it's serious? John?
The first question that we'd want to ask Gertrude is, how old is your house? I'm hoping that Gertrude has an old house, or better yet, a really old house, because if she does, her house is going to be composed of real wood, Wisconsin white pine, southern yellow pine, real plaster, all things that are really quite resistant to mold. But if Gertrude has a house that's built in the 70s, 80s, 90s, or more recently, she's going to have things like chipcore and OSB board and drywall and cellulose and all kinds of things that are wonderful mold factories. So the age really does make a difference. I think what Gertrude could probably do to have a fairly inexpensive inspection is maybe check with a American Society of Home Inspectors or a National Association of Home Inspectors licensed home inspector and have them take a look. Many of them have at least some mold training. If they are concerned with it, they're going to tell her that she needs to talk to a specialist who can really come in and do air tests to see if there is exposure in the house. But I would expect that an initial inspection by a local home inspector would at least either set her mind at ease or set her on the trail of finding an expert who can really give her definitive results.
And had a second question. This new roof that's was being applied is metal, and wondered if that's a lightning concern. Ken, as far as you know?
Well, lightning wants to go to the highest point, usually. Not always, but usually. So there's evidence to show that metal roofs really don't attract any more lightning strikes than any other type of roof. And in some cases, they've actually been shown to dissipate the electrical charge. Although when you get a direct hit with electricity, anything could happen. Having said that, if the house is up high, it's out in the country, they may want to get lightning protection, grounded system. None of that will hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you wanted to add, John?
There are specifications for grounding metal roofs.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
That's all very standardized. One can actually look, I believe, in the National Electrical Code has that.
All right. Let's take some phone calls. We do have a line open. If you have a question for our guests, Ken and John, in Madison, the number 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. We start with Sandy in Madison. Hello, Sandy. What's on your mind today?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. We're sort of in a quandary here. We've had water in the basement. We live on the Yahara River right in the city of Madison, and water was coming into the basement with a heavy rain we had in June, gushing in like a faucet had been turned on a couple places in the walls. We fixed part of the problem by having the gutters cleaned out and revamped, redirected, large downspouts put on. And we haven't had any water coming into the basement since, except for the water that was coming in because of the high water levels. When the water table level rose with the river being so high, we had like a little river running through the basement, coming in one corner, running along the wall and down into the drain hole. So we had water for weeks, in the basement, and we now have results in mold. We've called a number of people, had several people look at it, and we get different answers from each person. One says we've got to do the work from the inside, put dig up the basement, a floor, and put wall tile, drain tile in. We have paneling on the walls. So they've suggested taking all the paneling off, too. So cleaning out the basement totally so that they can do all that work.
Mm-hmm.
Another person says, no, we've got to do all the work from the outside. We probably won't have, if we do that, we probably won't have to do anything in the basement at all inside. We'll just do keep the water away from the house by various means with the around the outside of the house. Another person says, no, we probably will need to do both. First, we need to do the regrading, and it sounded like a major project they had planned, and also putting some kind of something on the walls to keep the water out, putting digging the dirt away from the...
A vapor barrier, a water barrier of sorts.
Yes.
So you want to know which one is right?
Yeah. Well, how do we know? Who to choose?
Well, the answer is yes. They're all somewhat correct. The best thing that you can do, if you can afford it, is to dig around the outside of the foundation, put drain tile down below the or at footing grade or below the footing grade, and then put a water barrier on the foundation wall, and then go from there, put that all back together, make sure the groundwater drains away from the house. I missed one point, that you want to be able to move that water to a sump pit, probably placed inside the house in the basement, and then have that water pumped to a controlled location. Having said that, and I'm sure John's going to want to jump in here too, because he's the mold and basement expert here, and I'm just a dumb contractor. But having said that, doing the inside work is pretty important too, especially if there's an issue with potential mold. Does your paneling go all the way to the floor?
Yes.
And so
we do have some mold evidence on the outside of the paneling.
Yeah.
On the bottom.
So you may end up wanting to remove the paneling. Is it nice, really nice old paneling, or is it just it is?
Yes, it is.
So maybe what you might want to do is carefully remove it so that you can maybe cut off the bottom couple of inches, reinstall it, and keep it off the floor in case you have any problems in the future. You can clean it up. You can kill the molds that are growing on it. If there's mold behind it, though, there's no way to get to it without taking it off the wall. So, and then if doing the work outside is cost prohibitive, the secondary solution would be to dig around the perimeter of your basement and put a drain tile and sump pit system in there. And that's not very expensive route to go comparatively, but then you don't have the option of doing a water barrier on the outside of the foundation. You're on Yahara, on the river. Are you on the city side, or are you on the Monona side of...
We're just on the east side of the Yahara River, right on the river, right along the parkway.
I see. Okay. So your house is probably built in the maybe the teens or the 20s. Yeah. So it's a foundation. It's not stone, any of that sort of stuff. John, you want to add anything about the molds?
Well, if you see mold on the visible surface, when you look at the backside, it's probably going to be 10 times worse.
Yeah.
So be a little careful taking that off. At least go to some of the mold websites, like the EPA has one, and the City of New York Public Health Department also has a good website where you can get some basic information on mold and how to manage it. It's really a tough problem because you've got two different water problems. You've got surface water that was coming into the house. And certainly that the outside system would take care of that surface water draining it. But you also have hydrostatic head pressure. As you said, you've got the water table just coming up above the floor. So I could see you spending $25,000 or $30,000 waterproofing the outside of your house. And if we get 7 inches of rain, having the basement be just as wet because it's going to come up through the floor. So you really are in a difficult situation. I think the first question I'd ask is, do I really need to have a finished basement? And if I didn't, I would simply take everything out of the basement. That's what I have in my house. I'm near a lake. I'm in sand. and I literally pump thousands of gallons an hour out in the springtime. But I have nothing in my basement, so it doesn't bother me, and I have an incredibly clean basement floor by the time I'm done.
You could always stock it if you're an angler.
The only way to really make a house waterproof, Sandy, is new construction, where you actually put down waterproofing products underneath the footings, underneath the basement floor, and wrap the entire wall. So basically, you've taken a roof and put it under the entire house. And that is the only thing that gives you 100% guarantee.
I think we've made the project more complex for the poor woman.
Yes.
Good luck to you, Sandy. Sandy,
thank you very much, and good luck, as he says. Let's move on to our next caller, and that will be Diane or Terry. Let's go to Terry in Heartland. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I'm in the market to replace my windows. They're about 20 years old, and they're all foggy in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard on the show another time that you shouldn't use vinyl replacement windows, but they didn't say why. So I guess I'd like to know what I should look for in replacement windows.
Well, you probably didn't hear that from us, but because there are some good vinyl products, the wood-clad replacement windows tend to be a little more stable than vinyl, they last longer. They're more aesthetically pleasing. They operate more efficiently, typically. So I don't really have a lot of negative things to say about vinyl windows, other than that there's a whole range of quality levels of quality, and some of them are really pretty good, and some of them are not very good. But if you did decide to go with vinyl, I would be really I would do a lot of research on the background of each individual manufacturer.
Like what qualities am I looking for?
Well, you're looking for R value. You're looking for mechanisms, the operating mechanisms, the locks, the weather stripping on them, the extrusions, the way they drain, they'll drain at the outside of the window, because they usually will have their own screen or storm screen system, and there'll be weep holes in there. You're looking for the John. You want to jump in anytime, but
you're looking. One thing you're looking for, Terry, is the warranty.
Yeah, warranty is a big issue. Yeah,
and if this company has been around for exactly 3 weeks, you know, don't count on a 20-year warranty. Also look at size availability, because you've got 20-year-old windows, and many manufacturers may charge extra. I believe, are you familiar with Milgard vinyl windows?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've put some of those in, and they're actually a pretty good company. I was trying to think of the name of them.
Yeah, a Milgard, Terry, if I recall, has no standard sizes. So you just order the windows, and they just make them without an upcharge. And the ones that I've seen certainly look to be pretty good. I think vinyl windows are just like cars. You can go out and buy a really bad car, or you can buy a really good car. It's just you need to do consumer research, as Ken said.
There's if you're thinking about doing a wood window replacement window, look at the Marvin Ultimate Insert. If you have double hung windows, I think they now make a casement insert window too. So, but what it is it's a window that actually fits inside your existing frame. And so you have you don't have to replace the trim and the outside casing. You basically take out the stops that hold the window in place and put this unit in. If your openings aren't quite square, you can square these units in the opening. I think you've got them in your house, Jim.
I believe
don't
we
you?
Do.
Yeah,
very satisfied.
Yeah, they're really nice windows, and so that'd be worth looking at and maybe doing a price comparison and an energy comparison.
Okay, and that's called Marvin Ultimate.
Marvin Ultimate Insert, I think,
insert.
Is what they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Terry. Thanks very much for the call. And if you have a question for our guest, the number in Madison is 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Ken Adams and John Freiberger about water issues, home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. And you're here listening on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's Jim Packard sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today as we talk about renovation with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates. Let's go to Dan next in Elkhorn. Dan, what's on your mind today?
I got a question for you. I've got an issue, a small house. When my well turns on, when my well runs, the power goes out. And the way to get the power back on is I actually have to turn my AC on, and then the lights go on. And I haven't been able to figure it out, and I was wondering if you had any input on what the issue could be.
I'm sorry to laugh. If this is true, this could be a dangerous situation. Have you had an electrician out, a professional electrician, to look at it?
I have not. I figured it was something electrical, but I mean, it's just the strangest thing.
Well, it's a very strange thing. So I would run, don't walk, to an electrician. Get somebody out there that knows what they're looking at, because none of these things should be happening the way they're happening.
Well, and these are probably 30-amp circuits as well, Dan. So issues of fire and electrocution are very serious. So get a contractor out there very quickly. They'll be able to trace it probably within 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call, Dan. And let's see what's going with Diane in La Crosse. Hello, Diane.
Hi. We have a house that was built in about 1974, and our garage was all wood inside, like particle board or chip siding. And in April, we hired a workman, and he put up dairy house siding inside the garage. It's a white fiberglass siding, and it's all buckled. When I drive in the garage, it's so wavy, I almost get seasick. And I'm wondering if there's moisture in that wood, if we've trapped in all this moisture that's caused the fiberglass to buckle, or if it was just kind of a shoddy job.
Well, two things. It's possible that there's moisture back behind it and the glue failed. They typically glue these in and then put, sometimes they'll put perimeter screws or a finish screw or finish nail. Was yours glued in the field?
No, it was done right in the garage.
That's
what he means.
You have basically 4-foot by 8-foot sheet. Did they swab glue on the back of this thing and then put it on the wall?
I did not see any glue used at all.
Yeah. Because it's quite possible that, it's possible there's moisture there. Was moisture an issue before?
Humidity. We've never had leaks or anything like that, but when it's humid, the walls would feel a little damp, but, there was never puddles on the floor.
Well, John may have a different opinion. My feeling is that when you put this fiberglass material on, when I was very young, I put it on without glue, and it always buckles and looks really, the construction term is poopy. Mm-hmm. It really does. And so we put just a regular mastic on the back. You can you put it on with a trowel, and then you put it in the field. Or you can do it with contact adhesives. That would work fine as long as there's no moisture behind the material. If there is moisture, then that brings up a different set of problems, and you're just covering up a moisture issue that may be happening. What kind of siding do you have on the outside?
On the outside of the house is cedar.
Cedar, okay. So cedar siding over a wafer board on the wafer board sheathing, basically.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And I'm also wondering then if mold is going to grow on that particle board between the fiberglass and the wood, if we're not allowing that wood to have access to air and dry out.
Well, if the fiberglass isn't sealed to the wood, that's certainly a possibility of getting moisture behind it, and then the moisture has no place to go, and it just starts to mold. If that was glued on dry material and there was no moisture coming in from the outside, then it should be, there's no way for moisture to get into it. Because they use this stuff in commercial kitchens all the time.
Oh, okay.
And it takes direct splash. Mm-hmm. On a very regular basis. You've got experience with this, don't you, John?
Only installing it in kitchens, Ken, and it does obviously act as a vapor barrier. But generally in garages, unless we actually have a water leak, we're not going to have mold problems because we're not going to have the absolute humidity get high enough so that we're going to get condensation as things hit the dew point. Typically, things are going to dry out. It's not like where we have houses where it's 25 below zero on the outside and 70 on the inside. So as long as there's no wall leaks or a rotting window or bad window casing or something, I don't think we have to worry too much about mold in there. But I think you're right. This sounds like an installation project. I have always called that oil canning.
Yeah.
Where it sort of looks like a
ski slope or a wave.
Yeah, same thing we see when people put very large pieces of metal on band boards and fascias on the outside of houses and don't do a good job of attachment. It just sort of develops wrinkles because wood moves.
It's like my skin, though.
Okay.
I'm sorry, it looks like
a mogul field at a ski hill.
Yes.
Yep.
So you might want to get your contractor back over there and ask him if he did use any adhesive, and if he didn't, ask him to reapply it with an adhesive and see how that does.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you.
Okay, good luck to you. Thanks a lot, Diane. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation, the number for you in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Sue in Appleton next. Hi, Sue.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Kind of a segue to the last one.
Okay.
17-year-old house, vinyl siding, clay color, faded. We decided to paint it. We did an olive green, Benjamin Moore, very good quality paint for exterior. Little bit of buckling going on. My only guess is that perhaps the paint got under the seams a little, and then heat and cooling, it just kind of, you know, popped a little bit at those spots. But any other guess why I got some buckling going on the siding?
This is a vinyl siding that you
Correct.
Covered? And you used a paint that's approved for vinyl?
Yep,
painting
we had
siding.
Them come out to the house and everything.
Great.
And
did you go from a lighter to a darker color?
That was the next thing. It's pretty lateral. Clay to light green.
Okay, so fairly close.
If the sun is hitting it just right from the road, you can't even tell the color. So it's a, I know, from light to dark would be a big thing, but it's pretty lateral.
Well, you know, the thing, Sue, about vinyl siding is that you don't actually fasten it hard to the wall. You nail the nails up
right.
so that it sort of floats back and forth on the nail and hangs on the nail rather than is pushed to the wall. And it's possible that when they painted it, they got paint in between the...
I painted it.
Oh, when you painted it, you quite likely got some paint in between the seams between... between the layers of siding, and that's sort of holding it in one area. But there should be enough flexibility in the paint so that it's not going to it's not going to stretch an oil can any more than it did before. Did you notice it doing it before, or is it just something that you're noticing for the first time?
No, we were.
Or is it worse?
We just finished painting, and I would say that section is not the south side that gets all the sun. It's the west side's got a little bit of buckling, which really doesn't get but late day sun, and it's been cured. Now it takes approximately 30 days to cure, so we're past the cure point, and that's the thing. That wall's past that time, so that's why I was wondering, is this going to happen all the way around, or is it just certain spots where I did kind of lift those seams and get paint in there. I wished I would have kind of pried them open while they dried, but...
You could take a putty knife and slide them carefully behind the bottom part of the siding, you know, at the joints, and that might free things up a little bit.
Okay.
So that might help. The question I asked before, I wasn't sure if I made myself clear. Do you know for a fact that it has an oil can like this before? This is new? Or that you're just noticing it now more than before because it's new and you're looking at it more closely?
Oh, no, we didn't have any buckling before.
Okay.
No, it's just in a couple of spots, so
That's good. Then try breaking the seams. Sometimes you could jiggle the siding back and forth a little bit. It shouldn't move freely, but it'll move with a little bit of resistance. But you should be able to move it and see how that works.
Yeah, there's two spots. One, unfortunately, is right by the front door.
Of course.
Two spots where at the seam, it rippled and it's free. It almost looks like it's melted, you know? So I don't know what happened there.
Yeah, I without seeing it, I couldn't give you any more advice.
Well, I figured it was because I got paint under the seam, so.
That would be pretty likely.
And just have to go in there and get the loosen paint out again.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. To summarize.
So good luck to you, Sue. Thanks very much for the call. And let's try Dave in Sturgeon Bay. Hello, Dave.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Sure, go ahead.
I had a question for you. I have a house that recently purchased that was built in the 1940s for one of the shipbuilders up here. The military actually built a whole bunch of houses, and what they did is they put asbestos siding on the houses. And we recently gutted the whole house. We want to get it back so it looks great, but the siding is crap. And we were wondering if you just put vinyl siding over top of the asbestos, would that be okay? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Before you go.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't really do that. You'll have to take the siding off, and you'll have to treat it as a hazardous material. The good news is that it's a lot less expensive now to remove asbestos siding. But what happens is the asbestos is so brittle that when you try to drive a nail through it, it'll just shatter, and then you'll have asbestos particles all over.
Okay.
That's the problem. Were you going to ask something?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I wouldn't. I would definitely. The siding itself is no good, right? You're saying it's cracked
and
that?
Yeah, it's falling apart and everything else.
Yeah. I don't know. I would say take it off. Treat it as a hazardous material. You could get probably, half a dozen different prices on what it would cost you. You'll probably be surprised. It won't be as big of a shock as you think to have it taken off.
Okay, what would you guys recommend for the best way of removing that?
Well, there's asbestos. There'll be professionals out there that'll remove the asbestos siding. You probably don't want to mess with it yourself. It's just too many things that can go wrong, and you want to make sure the ground around it is protected. You don't want the particles all over the place. You want to make sure it's taken care of and disposed of properly.
Just check your Yellow Pages, Dave, under asbestos abatement contractors, and maybe there's none in Sturgeon Bay, but then again, with the shipbuilding industry up there, there may well be, but certainly you're not that far from Green Bay, where I'm sure they would have someone. The last time that we had that removed, it only ran a couple of dollars a square foot, including the disposal cost, which I thought was really quite reasonable.
Yeah, prices have come way down over the years.
Okay, Dave, good luck to you.
Great, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Our guests are Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates. And we've got a couple of emails to deal with. One is from Tana. And Tana says that remind callers that if they have mold and water problems from the rain that we had in June, they should register with FEMA. Most of the counties in the southern half of the state were awarded individual assistance, and homeowners, renters, and businesses should register with FEMA. Based on their eligibility, they can get grants or very low-interest loans from SBA. Housing assistance is also available if the house is inhabitable or if there is a health hazard due to mold. The deadline to register with FEMA is September 15th. There is an 800 number for you at 800-621-3362, online at fema.gov, and the speech and hearing impaired, 800-462-7585. So that would take care of a lot of people who've been calling today with calls about the mold and water problems that haven't gotten on the air. Also from Matt, we have a modular home that in the wintertime, the roof leaks, staining the wall where the roof and the wall meet. I do not believe we have an ice barrier on our roof. We were not offered one. The company says we just have to shovel the snow off all the time. What can we do to eliminate the problem? Our house is 8 years old.
Yeah, they should have put a barrier on it.
A barrier on it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, can you retrofit the barrier?
Well, you have to tear off the roof, the bottom, at least from the eave up at least 2-3 feet above the area where the wall and the roof meet. And so you'll have to tear off the roof, put the barrier on, it glues right down to the plywood, and then you can re-roof it. That was a mistake. What happens is they probably don't have enough insulation up there. They've got the classic ice dam damage. And, of course, yeah, you can get up on a roof and shovel it off every time you have 3-4 inches of snow. This would make your life a lot easier.
A lot easier. Good luck to you, Matt. Thanks very much. Evelyn in Milwaukee is next. Hello, Evelyn.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a fireplace question. I have an 82-year-old house. It's a two-story brick with a traditional open house hearth fireplace. And, of course, being that old, it has some condition problems. The damper is, I think, rusty and won't close well, and I'm getting a little nervous about the inside of the chimney. So here's a question. I'm considering changing it to gas log configuration, and I want to know what you think about how that would affect the value of a home. And I know the energy efficiency would probably be better. I mean, and that I'd probably have to do all the chimney and damper work anyway. Is that correct?
I think with a house built around 1926, it'd be a good idea to have one of your local chimney sweeps do a real good inspection on your chimney to make sure the flue is still in good shape. Because if you put in a gas fireplace, you're not going to have all of the combustion byproducts. You're still going to have carbon monoxide going through there.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to want to know if you put in a gas fireplace if you're going to actually have to line the chimney to do that. So that's going to be a consideration. At the same time, they can check the exterior masonry of it, the chimney cap. Maybe they can get that damper fixed for you because even with a gas log, you're going to want that taken care of.
Sure.
So start with that. Here in Madison, at least, we have several large fireplace companies that do chimney sweep work and also install gas logs, and a couple of them seem to be extremely competent. I mean, this is really different than the old days of, you know, the sort of handyman mason who would fix the fireplace.
Since you're in Milwaukee, got any recommendations closer to me?
Right. I'm sure there's really, you know, Milwaukee's a lot bigger than Madison, so I'm sure there's some really good craftspeople there that can really evaluate this for you, give you a good warranty, make sure that if you put in a gas log that's correctly sized, the damper closes, and that everything is safe and maintainable for you.
Is this a fireplace company mostly, or a contractor, or what?
I would look under fireplaces and chimney sweeps and look under fireplace specialists.
Okay, and then how does it affect your home value, if at all?
I really don't know.
You don't know that? Okay.
Well, the one thing I can tell you, Evelyn, is that, you know, when you do home inspections, one of the things the home inspectors always look at is the exterior condition of the chimney and the chimney cap.
Yep.
You usually can't see the flues. So certainly have the entire system inspected, because it's going to cost just as much to get the whole thing inspected as just a little bit of it inspected.
Yeah. Well, I've had the exterior rebuilt a couple times already, so I know that's fine. And,
good.
You know, the design is fine. It draws beautifully and everything, but it's just such a mess, and I think I'd use it more if I had gas logs.
And certainly is cleaner.
And it'd be a lot cleaner, yeah. So just it'd be a fireplace company and just throw myself on their mercy, right?
What you always do is you call three of them, and they have to throw themselves on your mercy, because you're going to pick the one you want.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Evelyn. Thanks very much for the call. The number for your call is 263-1890 if you're in Madison. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Algoma and Sandy. Hi, Sandy. What's on your mind today?
Hi. You know what? I had the same kind of problem that one of your previous callers did, and also one of your guests does, with the fact that our basement floods. But when our basement floods, it doesn't just flood a little bit. If our sump pumps happen to stop, then it'll go up to my waist.
Oh,
we have to go in with waders to get the sump pumps working again. And they tend to get clogged up because we have a pond on one side and a pond on the other, and the water runs right underneath the house.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do is we want to get rid of the basement. We don't use it. We've got a couple of things down there that we could probably move up into the garage. Is that a possibility? How would we do that?
Well, it's actually fairly easy to get rid of a basement. You can turn it into a crawl space. And I'm assuming you've got basement windows?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one of the easiest ways of filling in a basement, or the one that I prefer, it's not the cheapest, because the cheapest is just shove gravel down there, but the one that I prefer is to fill the basement with washed stone or pea gravel up to about the height that you want. What's nice about pea gravel is it doesn't allow capillary action very easily. So you're going to have this filled-in basement, and if you just have gravel and the bottom of it gets really wet, the new floor in your crawl space is going to be very damp. But if you put in pea gravel, you're not going to have that capillary action. Then over the top of the pea gravel, put down a water barrier like Grace's Pre-Proof and pour a new floor over there. Give yourself a couple feet of crawl space room. And also, just to be extra careful, put in a drain tile system maybe a good foot below that floor into a sump pump, just in case the water ever gets that high. That should give you a nice, warm, undamp, dry floor, and something that's easily maintained.
Excellent.
And the water can flow right through the old basement anyway, right through that pea gravel, so we're not going to have all kinds of interesting hydrostatic pressure pushing on your walls.
Oh, cool. I didn't know. Thank you.
Okay, Sandy, good luck to you. Thanks very much. And let's see if we have an answer for Lynn in Rushford. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, thank you. We're thinking of having fiber cement siding put on our house. The contractor we've spoken with, he's a little bit hesitant. I wouldn't say he's reluctant, but a little bit hesitant to use it. He hasn't used it before. Just like your opinion on fiber cement siding.
Well, I think it's really wonderful stuff. The problem with it is that you don't want to have somebody that doesn't know what they're doing putting it on. If your contractor is qualified and is willing to put the time in to research the proper application techniques, the siding will last a long time. It holds paint well. One thing that I know John really, really beat into my head when we first met, and he's convinced me about it, is something that's called a rain screen system. And that's to prepare the house so that you can set the siding slightly off the wall using furring strips and such, and that way moisture can work its way and moist air can circulate behind the siding as well as in front of it. That will make any siding last longer and certainly will be beneficial to your house and the cement board siding. But let's see, you need a couple of special tools to install it. There's some special cutters. You have to be very careful about breathing the dust because the cement dust is not unhealthy. So the contractor will want to be to make sure he's protecting himself. But on balance, if you were to compare it to, say, vinyl siding and the making of the siding is so it causes so much environmental pollution the small amount of dust that is created by cement board still makes it far friendlier to the environment. So that's my soapbox. You want to add anything, John?
I'll just add a few things. Okay. I really agree with you, Ken. I'd like to outlaw vinyl siding if I could. And cement siding.
They say vinyl is final, but
it isn't. Cement board, the other thing, Lynn, is take a look at the kind of warranties you can get with cement board and the warranties on the finishes you can get. You can get a 20-year warranty on the paint on cement board siding. And the installation instructions, I guess CertainTeed's weather boards are probably the one I'm most familiar with. Ken's maybe more familiar with the James Hardy Company products. But weather boards, it's got about a 30-page, nicely detailed installation instruction. So if your contractor is willing to learn and do it carefully and realizes that old Lynn's coming out there every night to make sure that everything is done exactly to the way the installation instructions say, you may want to work with him on it. And if you want information on the rain screen system, I believe that the Forest Products Lab does have a technical bulletin that they issued about 10 or 12 years ago on how to do rain screen systems. If not, email me and I can send you lots of information.
Oh, thanks very much for all your help here.
Sure. All right. Lynn, thank you and good luck to you. And we're talking about water issues, home renovation, repair, and inspection issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison and with John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about home renovation, repair, inspection, water issues, and we'd be happy to hear from you. The number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Stan in New Glarus next. Hi, Stan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
My home is 36 years old. I have a problem with my window operating hardware. I cannot lock the window. How may I get replacement hardware or find someone who can repair it?
Are they casement windows? They crank out when you turn...
They crank out sideways one way or the other way.
Okay. Do you know the name of the manufacturer?
I wish I had.
Sometimes you can tell by looking on the hardware itself. It might be stamped in, and sometimes if you look, are they insulated windows, insulated glass?
Yes, they are.
Sometimes you'll see a little insignia somewhere around the glass that'll tell you. If you can't, there's a number.
You say the glass?
Yeah, right around the glass, the perimeter of the glass.
No, the hardware screws out.
Right, right. But yeah. I'm just looking for the name of the manufacturer.
Yeah, I looked at that hardware inside and outside. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether the hardware is specific to the make of the window.
Typically, it would be.
It would be.
Yeah.
Now, there is a company called Truth, though, that makes hardware for a tremendous number of windows.
Yes, yes.
And you could go to the Truth website.
Truth, T-R-U-T-H. Truth,
just, right. Mm-hmm. You can also go to the Blaine website in Minneapolis.
I'm a little on the slow side.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Blaine?
Blaine in Minneapolis.
Is that B-L-A-I-N?
A-I-N-E.
Okay.
And then there's A-N-I-E. A huge one in Brooklyn, New York.
Blaine Window.
Yes.
Minnesota.
That's
right. They're
Minneapolis.
Okay, and then the next one?
In Brooklyn, New York, I believe it's called A1 Hardware, and they carry things that are absolutely astonishing. Okay. I get parts for 1890s windows from them.
If your windows aren't that old, you may be able to take one of the sets of hardware off the window.
I did that, it's strange.
Did you take it down to one of the window companies, on the east side of Madison, I'm thinking of Martin Glass, or there's Window Design Center is another one.
Wait, let me have those numbers.
Names? I don't know what you have down in New Glarus. Don't you have a big lumber yard down there?
Yeah, we do. I think I talked to them about it several years ago.
And they couldn't help you?
At that time, no.
Because if you could try some of the local wind, if you like to do the footwork rather than get going online, you can check with some place like on the east side of Madison. There's a company called Martin Glass, and they've got a whole wall of old hardware.
Martin Glass.
And there's, I think, some of the other companies, Lake City Glass might, and some of the other companies in town. Okay. I'm sorry if I don't know of any of the companies down your way.
You're leading me in the right direction.
But take the hardware with you, and then you might be able to walk out with a couple of pieces right there.
I will do that. By the way, the pieces of hardware sometimes are not interchangeable, yet they are exactly alike. And I don't know whether it was the way they cut the windows in the factory or what.
Well, at any rate,
thank you very much.
Okay. Have fun finding them. You know, you should be able to find the hardware either by going online or going to these places.
Well, I love using my feet.
Yeah, there
okay.
you go.
Okay,
I thought so for some reason.
Stan, thank you very much for your call. And let's go to Mike in Richland Center. Hello, Mike.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Just got a quick question. I have a 1911 brick home. Some of the electrical system has been updated to the new wiring, and some of it is still the old knob and tube. And I hear from some contractors, knob and tube, no problem with it, keep using it. I hear from another contractor, it's absolutely the most dangerous thing out there. Don't run window air conditioners off of it. Can you guys help me out here with the knob and tube wiring?
Once again, everybody's correct. the problem with knob and tube wiring is that the copper is not highly refined and it gets hot to the touch, which is why when it goes through wood, it's in tubes, and why it's off of wood, it's held up with knobs. The real big concern, Mike, is if there's any insulation in the attic over knob and tube or in the walls over the knob and tube, because if there is, you have a major fire hazard, and that is something that the National Electrical Code really does not allow. And if you've got any insulated over knob and tube, you want to get rid of it immediately. He's correct on it really is safe. There is nothing in any code that I know of that says you have to pull knob and tube out of a house. But you certainly don't want to put in something that's pulling, you know, a good 20 amps or something through a wire that's going to get warm. Or you can imagine your knob and tube looking like the wires inside your toaster after you've run that air conditioner for 8 hours.
You can have problems with your insurance company, too.
Right. That's the next place I was going,
okay.
Ken, is if your insurance company knows you have knob and tube, you are not going to have insurance. Now, I've talked to the American Family here in Madison and said, well, what do you do? And they say, well, if somebody calls and says, we insure a house with knob and tube, we say no. I said, do you ask them? They say no, because most people don't know what knob and tube is, so we don't bother asking. But it is becoming a big issue because from an actuarial point of view, there are more fires in knob and tube houses, and houses with NM cable than there are with the BX, the Greenfield, and the Modern. So at least I would say in the next 5 years, you should try to plan to get rid of it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things you can do with a brick house. You don't have to necessarily go around the outside. You can. We do a lot of things where we'll take trim off and put small holes strategically and fish new wires through that way. And then sort of hide the holes behind the trim, basically. So a good electrician working with a painter or a plaster repair person, they can buzz through there fairly quickly. It ain't cheap, as you probably found out getting half of it done, but it's well worth the money.
Okay. All right, well, thanks, guys.
Okay, Mike, thanks very much for your call. And let's go to Lisa next in Madison. Lisa, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I know Tyvek is a moisture barrier, but what's the difference between a moisture barrier and a vapor barrier?
It's gigantic. Tyvek will keep beads of water from passing through it and wetting the wall. But if you've got humidity moving from the inside of your house through your drywall and out through the insulation, Tyvek will let that breathe to the outside. So it stops liquid water, but it allows vapor to come through, which is the same thing that old-fashioned felt paper also does. Okay. Plastic that you use on the inside of the house, commonly called Visqueen, sheet plastic, that has a very low perm rating, and that stops both vapor and water. So here in Wisconsin, we always want to have a vapor barrier on the inside of our house, but something breathable on the outside in case we do get some water into that wall system so that at least it can go one direction.
Okay. Also, now polystyrene and something called Tuf-R polysaccharate has foil on it.
Yes.
What's the difference between those two if you were going to use it behind siding?
I think you're going to have to check the perm ratings on it because the perm ratings on all of the foam insulations vary, and I know styrofoam's 0.6 or something or other, but I really can't remember most of them. But what you really want to be careful of if you have a house that does not have a vapor barrier on the interior is that if you end up producing a vapor barrier on the exterior by putting like a foil-faced insulation over it, then your walls are going to have a problem drying to the outside. Moisture from the inside may go into the walls and condense and can only dry to the inside then. How old a house do you have, Lisa?
1954.
And it probably does not have a vapor barrier.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's got that felt behind the cedar spike.
Right. That's a water and wind barrier.
Water,
though.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't use polystyrene or...
You'd have to check on what the perm rating is. I think what if you're
the
going
permeability?
To permeability, right? The permeability,
okay,
yeah,
not R value. Okay,
right. So, what are you thinking of taking the siding off the house and wrapping the house in new insulation?
Yeah, those Tyvek and then polystyrene and then siding.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have much of a roof line, so I have to.
Okay, and I think what you may want to think about is you may want to do a little bit of research on vapor transfer. You can actually put a paint-applied vapor barrier on the inside of your house. Several companies make...
I approve one, right?
Yes, there are some that are, I think they're HUD or FHA certified. I can't remember. Do you remember, Ken?
No.
There's federally certified paints. Because once you tighten up that wall system, you really don't want to get mold and mildew in there due to condensation.
Okay.
Now, how thick of insulation are you going to put on the outside, or have you?
I think half is as far as it can go because of the roof line.
Half an inch.
There's no fascia.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So where do you have a cape?
I don't know why they built houses that way, but that's what they did.
Well, post-war, they did a lot of houses without overhangs.
Yeah.
Cut a couple bucks here and there. That's what they were doing.
It doesn't help the basement. Yeah.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and then watch that detailing at the top of that wall because we see so many of these houses with very limited overhangs where we're getting water into the wall. And now you're going to have a very tight system. If you get water in at the top of that wall, you're going to end up with decay.
Okay.
So really make sure your contractor knows what they're doing. Get somebody who's experienced.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Our guests are Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializing in residential renovation projects, and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. He is involved with historic restoration, water issues, and is also a licensed home inspector. Question, does treated lumber need additional protection from rain and ultraviolet light?
You're pointing at me? Oh, okay. yes. That's a good question, Jim. You know, treated lumber is made to be exposed to the elements.
Okay.
There's various grades of treated lumber. There's just regular lumber that you hand paint a waterproofing on. There's this green pressure treated materials that you buy at lumber yards, and that has three different gradings. There's stuff that's graded for exposure to the elements. There's stuff that's graded for exposure to the elements and touch contact with the ground, and there's stuff that's made to be stuffed in the ground. The best by far is the material that has the highest rating. I think it's 0.6 pounds per cubic foot or something like that. But
and briefly, what does ultraviolet light do to this?
Well, ultraviolet light, it basically degrades materials over time. Look what it does to your car.
Mm-hmm.
Your bright, shiny red sports car in a couple of years is starting to turn orange. And so it degrades it. I don't know what it does to the cells of the wood exactly. You'd probably want to call, if you're really interested in that, you'd probably want to call
Forest Products.
And we'll talk to one of their people. But
Ken, we've got to leave it there.
Okay.
We'll pick it up after the news. Our guest, Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to continue to talk about water issues, home renovation, repair, inspection issues with our guests, Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming in today, spending time with us.
Yeah, thank you.
And Sarah Carroll is our on-air producer today. And if you have a question, you would go through her at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Mentioned the lines were full, and so let's start taking some calls again. Richard in Merrill is next. Hello, Richard.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. John Freiber has been real good about emailing me on this specific question. I have a question about if a private property landowner wants to cut wood and then use it in building his or her own home, how would you go about getting that lumber code compliant?
Well, there's two ways of doing it, Richard. One is that you can have it graded to the American Forest Products grading system. The downside of that, as you already know, is there are no graders here in Wisconsin. So you're going to have to find someone. There is a grader in Michigan and a grader in Minnesota who do come to Wisconsin and grade, but we have no locally certified lumber graders in the state of Wisconsin, which, considering the history of our lumber industry, is really fairly stunning. That can be a bit of a problem because you're looking at spending a bit of money. So I called Leroy Sibelski, who is the head of Building and Safety and the Uniform Dwelling Code, and Leroy kindly phoned me back and said that if you don't have the lumber graded, what you can do is you can simply use the span tables and consider all of the lumber that you have as number 3 for that grade. So in other words, if you've cut some white pine, you go to the span table and you look at number 3 white pine, or if you're doing some framing out of oak, oak floor joists, you would go to the span table under oak, and you'd use the number 3 grade. Now, that means you're going to end up with a shorter length span than you would have with a number 2, a number 1, or a structural clear. And those tables are all available from the Department of Commerce. I think you can get them online. I'm trying to remember. It's probably COM 23. But it's all part of the Uniform Dwelling Code, and there should be enough information on there where, as long as you know the species of wood, you should be able to tell your building inspector that Leroy Sibelski himself said you could use the number 3 and not have to go through the trouble of getting it graded.
And Leroy's kind of the troubleshooter because he's been very helpful to me when I've called him also. Specifically, I think it's COM 21 that lists the alternative method for grading native. It's called native sawn ungraded lumber. And then you have to go to the appendix, which I think is then COM 23.
That's correct.
And that's at the Department of Commerce Buildings and Safety. Now, I have one more question on that, and thank you, John, for answering that. Am I going to get a different answer, and I know there's probably no way to really answer this, from different building inspectors in different parts of the state? If I'm a local private build a owner who's trying to build my own home rather than being a contractor.
This is why I was so glad that Leroy returned my call, because basically you've gotten the answer from as close to God himself as you're going to get in the state of Wisconsin bureaucracy. And Leroy has been with the state for a long time. He's widely respected, and his name, I think, is the gold standard. He arranges a lot of the educational, the continuing education for inspectors. And I would be surprised if you tell your local building inspector that you talked to Leroy Sibilski and he approved this, that there would be any objection.
Okay. And he, like I said, he's been very helpful with me also. So
right. He's a wonderful public servant.
Richard, thank you very much for the call. Glad we were able to clear that up. And let's go to Bill in Madison next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys. Great show. Hey, I have a couple of questions. I have a crawl space under my house, and I find that I have there's no ventilation to the outdoors, and it's actually being vented into my house, or so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's how big is the access to the space from the basement?
There is no basement. It literally is just a crawl space.
Okay. I guess I misunderstood. You have a foundation on your house, and then you have an addition with a crawl space, or you?
It's kind of a long story. It's got a wooden foundation, and then they poured cement and then put down or dropped in loose fiberglass insulation on top of the slab. And there is no ventilation of that up to the outside.
Well, it doesn't have to be vented to the outside to meet code. It's that what the code says is that you need to have a square foot of ventilation either to the interior or the exterior. I think there's some size constraints on that. So it can be vented to the interior. The question that we always have is, are you picking up radon? Are you picking up excessive moisture levels from the crawl space?
I'm worried about the chemicals in the fiberglass, because it's 20-year-old fiberglass. And then the other question is, I've basic code violations in my house, and I had a friend tell me that it's literally almost impossible to go back and seek compensation for work I might have to do to bring the house up to code. Is that true?
When was this work done, Bill?
Well, the house is about 20 years old.
Okay, so you have a 20-year-old house that you have defects in.
Yeah.
And you've owned it for 20 years. Yeah, I think you, unless the only way you have any recourse, I don't want to give legal advice, but the only way you'd have recourse is if there was some sort of 20-year warranty on the house, because Wisconsin contract law is pretty clear that 6 years is the warranty for home repair contracts.
Okay. Well, actually, the house was built by the owner.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't. He did it mostly himself, from what I understand.
Yeah, very, very difficult. But you know, check with a local attorney, because we don't want to really give you advice on that.
Okay, and then one last quick question: how long has the 5/8 drywall for ceiling been in been law or code?
Well, 5/8 drywall for ceiling isn't really a code issue, I don't believe. I think that it's sort of an industry standard to use when you have your rafters placed 2 foot on center. People still use half inch when the rafters are placed 16 inches on center. And they also have a, I believe it's called a high density or high stress gypsum that's used for ceilings. So 5/8 is not written in stone, from my understanding.
Okay. And just with that ventilation issue, can I send that up to the side through the roof, like through my utility closet?
Yes, you certainly could.
Okay.
And if you're concerned about your insulation, why don't you take a little bit of it out and have it tested and see what's in it?
Okay,
that might help you sleep better at night.
Mm-hmm. All right. Appreciate the advice.
All right, Bill. Good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. The number for you is 263-1890 if you're in Madison. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Chris in Denmark is next. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I'm just finishing up an enclosed porch addition on my house, and I was it's not going to be heated, but I was wondering about insulating it still, specifically the ceiling.
Okay.
It's a pretty flat roof. There's just slight pitch, and I'm just using the rafters to put the ceiling up as well.
So you're thinking that maybe someday in the future you might heat it, so you would want to insulate it now?
Not really that as much, but I was just wondering if the insulation would just, it's going to be passively heated. There are a lot of windows, and so I was wondering if that would keep it warmer in the winter, or at least late in the fall or early in the spring.
Sure, it would extend your season a little bit, sure.
Okay, and I have a neighbor who built something pretty similar. It has a metal roof on it, which mine does too. And during the winter time, in his, he said it heats up easily into the 80s some days in the winter, and he has a blower system that blows it into the house when his temperature gauge, and when it reads that it's higher, it blows it air into the house to help heat the house.
Sure.
So I was wondering if putting insulation in the ceiling would make it not as warm inside then?
Well, it's hard to say. It depends on how you collect your heat.
Okay.
So I'm not an expert, an HVAC expert, so I can't really give you solid advice on that. John may have some more input on it. Does he have his ceiling insulated? Is the metal exposed on the inside, or does he
It's exposed, and there's no ceiling either. So
yeah,
it's just the rafters and then the metal.
Right. So you are going to, when you insulate it, you are going to keep... you know, you are going to dampen this the radiant heat that you'll be collecting from outside. It's going to be absorbed by the insulation, so it's not going to work quite as efficiently. But that's not to say that you couldn't collect it somehow. I'm just not exactly sure how. So you may want to do a little research on collection passive solar collection systems and see if that'll help you.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much for the call, Chris in Denmark. Here is an email from Warren in De Pere. Discussed earlier were wood versus vinyl. I'd like to suggest another good alternative, aluminum-clad windows. In our previous house, we replaced most windows with Colby and Colby aluminum-clad windows, maintenance-free and seemed quite resilient.
Sure. Yeah, and the windows I was talking about back then, too, was were Marvin Ultimate Clad inserts, and they are clad on aluminum-clad on the outside as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Colby's are another... local manufacturer they're made
exactly.
I think in Wausau.
Let's go to Laura in Oneida next. Hello, Laura.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. My husband and I are making part of our basement into a bathroom and a fitness room, and we have received conflicting advice as to what to use on the walls and the floor to avoid mold problems down the road. We want to use blue board and plaster on the walls and cork flooring. And then also some of those walls will be having floor-to-ceiling mirrors. So should we be using a vapor barrier on the outside walls and the floor? And if so, what kind? And do we insulate?
Oh, basements get very, very complicated. My preference for basement floors is to use ceramics. Porcelain ceramics, clay ceramics, but something that basically is not going to harbor mold in any case at all. The green or blue-tinted drywall has a little bit more water resistance than other drywall, but I really don't think it's necessarily the answer. Now, you're looking at actually plastering?
Yes. In certain areas are going to be plastered, and then where the mirrors are, we don't feel there's a need to plaster.
I think you're correct there. What you may want to talk to your plastering contractor about is using an exterior gypsum sheathing that actually has a fiberglass mesh rather than any cellulose at all. So you often see this on the exterior of buildings. It's sort of a gold or yellow color. And there's nothing in that is going to allow mold growth. And you can plaster over it with a, just as you can plaster over Calcor board or any of the other large sheet lath boards.
Okay, what was that? It was an exterior gypsum.
It's exterior gypsum sheathing. Several companies make it. I think Georgia-Pacific makes it. Densglass, is that one of the brand names?
I think so, yeah.
But basically what it is calcium sulfate, and it is held together rather than by cardboard, which is what drywall really is. but by a very fine gold or yellow fiberglass mesh.
I see.
So there's nothing in it that's cellulose-based.
So it can take moisture.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, on the ceramic and the porcelain floor or stone floor.
Stone like is wonderful.
Limestone. You put that right over the concrete and...
Yes.
That's the way to go with no barrier or anything under that.
No, how are you going to heat the place?
It's forced air heat, okay. And it comes in through the ceiling.
You know, one thing you might want to consider if you do a... a ceramic or a stone floor is to do a radiant floor heat in at least the section maybe where you'll be laying on the floor and doing stretches or working with a ball or whatever kind of program you work on. And that way you can supplement your heat. It's down low and, so that you're comfortable when you're laying on the floor, sitting on the floor, working out.
Right. So then there would be no vapor barrier needed between that and the... ceramic or anything like that.
I would say probably not. Now, if we do wood floors, then we do generally recommend vapor barrier, and they're actually you can get specifications from that on a book called The Indoor Air Quality Guide, written by Wagi. Last name is A N I S, and that's available from the Boston Society of Architects website. They have a bookstore there. And I know Wagi has thought a lot about how to finish basements, and his indoor air quality guide, I believe, has drawings on how to put a cork or a wood floor in a basement in a way that he feels works well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, and good luck to you, Laura. Appreciate hearing from you. And let's go to Dean next in Heartland. Dean, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon.
Yep.
I got a question for you. I built a home about 20 years ago, and it's a ranch. Very long wall on the west side of the home. What I've done is I've put rebar in the footing so the house isn't settling, and I also put rebar in the block and poured concrete in the block for stability instead of a poured wall. And I noticed after all the rain we've had on the west wall, I have a hairline crack right down the center of about 3 or 4 of my block, right in the center of the wall. And I'm worried about stability on that wall now.
Now, this is a vertical crack or horizontal crack, Dean?
Up and down, sir.
Okay, vertical crack. Okay, yeah, it sounds like we might have a problem developing there.
Okay.
Now, this is on the west wall. Which way are the floor joists running? Are they running north, south, or are they running east, west?
They're running east, west, sir.
So they're parallel to the wall with the crack in it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, drat. Well, Dean, there are these things that are called flexural members, which is basically a steel tube. We bolt them into the concrete floor and into the footing below, and then we secure them at the top. They're very easy to secure if your joists are running perpendicular to the wall with the crack in it. If they're running the other way, you actually need an engineer to sort of devise a system. But I would probably talk to a local professional engineer, ask them to come over and tell them you think you need a flexural member here. You're basically buying a little bit of insurance so that that wall does not move further. Yep. And for a small reasonable cost, they should be able to design a flexural member that will help support that wall. The problem with our soils is a lot of our soils are 40 and 60 pound loads per square foot. Then when we get them super saturated, all of a sudden we've got 80 or 100 or 110 pounds. So if the soil never gets saturated again, it may never happen. But then again, maybe you do want to buy a little bit of insurance.
Okay.
But having a PE look at it is probably the only sure way to have a pretty good probability to be able to forecast what's going to happen in the future.
Okay, let me ask you, this was another, my wife's idea. What we have is an in-ground pool in the backyard. And from that in-ground pool where the concrete stops up to the home there, that is her flower bed. And I thought about just eliminating that flower bed and putting concrete there. Would that help a great deal, or am I wasting my money there too?
Without really knowing the soils and the slope and other things, I really don't know. Again, I really think you need some professional advice here from a good PE.
All right. I will take that in consideration. Get it done this weekend, sir.
All right.
Thanks for calling,
Dean. Thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. As we talk with Ken Adams and John Freiberger, let's go to Jim in South Range. Hi, Jim.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good.
I have a desire to re-side my house. house, and I'll tell you, the house was built in the 70s, early 70s, and it's cedar-sided. It was 2x4 construction, and I have vertical channel lock cedar on there now. It's been weathered through these 30-plus years, and woodpeckers just love it.
Oh, yes.
And so my wife is convinced we need to get this replaced, and along with the windows and doors and so on. And so it's a job I have coming up. My question is this. Can I reside over the top of that cedar? It's all in decent shape.
Sure.
But I would like to add a layer of inch and a half layer of foam, fur it around the edges so it's not an air leak situation beyond that. And is that a problem with trapping moisture? There's 2x4 construction followed by tar paper and half-inch wafer board and then the cedar vertical siding.
Yeah. You can certainly side over the siding itself. The big problem that you have is how do you finish around the windows? And we can get to that in a second. Is there any good reason that you want to leave the siding on?
Not in particular other than labor.
Well, I mean, taking the siding off is really not a big ticket item, and it might be worth doing that just because that's expensive little piece of real estate that 3/4 of an inch mm-hmm. could all go to insulation. And then you could, tighten up your house quite nicely.
Then
you may want to consider taking it off, although you could leave it on.
Okay, well, that's not out of the question. I got a lot of time for labor, so taking it off.
You're going to do this yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the tar paper would have to be replaced then, with a wind barrier.
Well, what we would normally do in that situation is we would put. Well, what would you do? Put the insulation on first and then put the vapor barrier over the top of it? Wouldn't that makes the most sense?
The insulation, then the water barrier,
A water barrier, of course, like one or two layers of 15-pound felt or Tyvek would work. But the big ticket item is how do you trim around doors and windows? So you're going to have to put extension jams on the outside of your windows. And the critical thing there is weather stripping.
Yes.
I'm sorry, that's not exactly the right word. Weather flashing is the issue. You know, you want to make sure you flash it correctly.
Right, and then tie that together with a tar paper or whatever, have it taped and so on, in addition to flashing.
Jim, what I'd suggest is to put on a layer of tar paper and then put Tyvek over it and then download the instruction guide for Tyvek. They really do have a good guide as to how to do these windows, but read that before you ever get started.
Okay.
Yeah, read everything you can get your hands on. Journal of Light Construction, JLC.com, I think it is a good place to start for this sort of thing. If you Google search it, you'll see a lot of repeated information, and this will help you out.
Journal of Light Construction.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, Jim, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. Good luck on your project. I'm sorry we can't get to more of the calls, but Greg, Dwight, and Oki, we ran out of time. Thanks to Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializing in residential renovation projects. And Ken, if someone wants to email you, what should they do?
They could send me an email at AdamsDesigns@AOL.com is the easiest way to get me.
Okay.
ADAMS Designs.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. And if you'd like to contact John, how do they do that?
That would be at FREI@chorus.net. And chorus is spelled like a group of singers.
Thanks very much to the two of you for being here. Next September 11th, John Viner of Home Performance Testing, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry will tackle home renovation issues if we haven't finished all of them today. Coming up Friday on Garden Talk, the very knowledgeable Mel Myers of Milwaukee. Our thanks to Sarah Carroll for on-air phone production today. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.